of, you know, being able to say, this is who I am, this is what I desire, and this is where I want to go. Right. Now I need a roadmap to get there. Mm-hmm. And in the midst of HIV and AIDS, have we afforded those opportunities, mm-hmm. even while we know that they have been missing, and because we've been running here and there trying to get $15 to keep the lights on, mm-hmm. we've been trying to make sure that we don't get moved from place to place, or our women have been put in situations where they are forced to go out and do commercial sex work, mm-hmm. in order to be able to have a place to stay, to go up to Hagerstown and sit with the guys, and the guys tell you about how they're being gang raped because they didn't do what the guard said to do, and mm-hmm. so they are forcing them into relationships. Mm-hmm. But also, you have to sit and listen to the pain that's carried from young Black men, mm-hmm. against their mothers, because their mothers went out and were actually dealers, mm-hmm. and or they mm-hmm. were sex workers, only because they were trying to thrive. Mm-hmm. They were trying to survive. And so until we write those things and we make certain that we develop policies around them, they'll continue to go forth and we'll continue to be in the head of something that we should now be the same place where another population of people, white people in specific, white gay men, their numbers are really falling, our numbers continue to rise, or they stay at the same level. And we have to speak to those issues.
Mm-hmm. And also, when we think about intimate partner violence for LGBTQ communities, some of that does show up as survival sex. Mm-hmm. And if you begin to frame that, especially for young people, you have 18, 19, 20, 21-year-olds who are now pushed out into the world without having those skills that you mm-hmm. talked about to be able to sustain themselves. So they may not even understand that it is survival sex, mm-hmm. or it is some type of intimate partner violence where the power dynamics and that relationships are unequal. That's so they right. may not have the option to practice the same level of self-care that someone else may be able to. Mm-hmm. And I do think we need to help kind of improve that job readiness and the job availability for LGBTQ folks as well, too, because mm-hmm. even just showing up as LGBTQ in certain work environments can be threatening to your survival. That's right. And how do we begin to impact that? And without that kind of broader sense of LGBTQ awareness, how can we begin to talk about HIV in these broader communities?
Mm-hmm. How do we keep it on the forefront?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. So I'm going to move on to the first MSM question. So how can we reduce HIV stigma for Black MSM by including heterosexual men?
One of the great things that I had the opportunity to do when I was working with the Counseling Center at Morgan State University through Cody Lopez Consults is we were implementing the Real AIDS Prevention Project. And we found it very, very difficult to promote the events that we were having specifically because we were calling them for gay and bisexual men. Mm. But on campus, once we shifted the narrative to a men's health and wellness group, mm-hmm. We started getting so many different folks to come through the door. There were things that I had never even dreamed about. There was even one gentleman who came in who identified as heterosexual and kind of talked about the cognitive dissonance he would have when he watched homosexual porn because he knew it was wrong, but it was enjoyable. So he didn't have a place to unpack that until we changed what this group was and made it about men's wellness. So that way, no matter how you walk through the door, what you engaged in, we were there to support you as a brother. Mm. And kind of that dynamic and sense of community, I think, is what's missing mm-hmm. For Black men in general, especially LGBTQ Black men who have to acquiesce to this homonormative narrative mm-hmm. when they mm-hmm. show up into certain spaces. Mm-hmm. So I think we need to start really developing brotherhood and what brothers look like.
We were talking about ways to reduce stigma in Dr. Farley's HIV course mm-hmm. Over the winter break, and one of the things that I was mentioning was about, you know, the importance of having targeted messages. Like we know that, you know, targeted messages are more cost effective, they're more tailored, they're more all, but then really being mindful of like kind of like the unintended consequences mm-hmm. of how targeted messages really impact increased stigma and marginalization among certain groups, particularly when we're talking about gay men and Black gay men in particular.
Yes, it was actually just a billboard that went up. I'm not sure exactly which city it was in, but it was a HIV prevention and treatment message on a billboard with very effeminate black gay men. Mm. And in this urban area, it kind of put some of those men's safety in jeopardy because they were now targeted as those people who had HIV. Mm. So when we make these messages, we also have to think of kind of to not other people, to make these messages as inclusive as possible while still addressing the group that needs to hear the message. We should still be aware of how these messages impact communities and their safety.
And one of the things that I'm interested in as I do more and more community-based participatory research is, like, you know, as we design campaigns and things like that, like, I'm more interested in, like, how do people want us to talk to them about these messages, right? Like, it's not about, for me, I'm trying to, you know, get away from the approaches of, like, oh, we're the researchers, we're the experts, and we're going to tell you this because you need to know it like this. But what we're finding is that, you know, some of the messages about prevention and risk are really kind of inconsistent. Mm-hmm. And for people who aren't typically engaged in health information and not health literate per se, it becomes confusing. And so that, and so I'm more interested in, like, okay, what do you want? What do men want to know about HIV? Like, how, and how do we advocate those for those messages? Like, what do they need to know that's relevant for them to in order to increase, you know, prevention in their health for them, not just, you know, oh, I need to tell you equals you because you equals you. But, like, what about this do we need to clarify for you to buy into it, and really emphasizing that as part of the messages for men?
Yeah, and being really cognitive of the language that we're using. I mean, the language of risk scares everybody.
Right.
So if we're telling you that whatever you're doing in your loving relationship is risky, then I'm not going to come talk to you. I think that that's really important. And I did want to just speak to the B of LGBTQ, thinking about sexual minority women, and the fact that so many heterosexually identified women, black women, are also those that are experiencing the most violence as well as most at risk for HIV. And that is still an unknown. We don't really understand that, what's going on. However, I think that it's important, as we think about how we tailor the messages to men, to also be inclusive of the fact that many men who have sex with men are also having sex with women. And we call it gay and bisexual, but they may not be calling it gay and bisexual.
Right. Absolutely.
So just being really clear. And I know that in my work, I'm really just trying to get away from just using labels,
names.
Period. It's difficult to get away from using gender in the messaging, but the type of sex you're having, I'm trying not to label it. I'm just asking you what makes sense for you. What are you doing? And I think that just makes sense for, you know, all of the prevention that we want to do.
We were talking about in Dr. Farley's HIV course about, you know, how status neutral approaches are really, really going to have to be the way to go moving forward. And we're seeing it work in New York, in California. And so what he's doing, what REACH is really doing here in Baltimore, is really trying to get to, I mean, they already are, you know, implementing status neutral approaches, you know, gender neutral approaches, like those things, really getting away from, you know, labeling people and, you know, that target, just to really provide services to folk, not even really figuring out what do you need, and we probably have it.
Right. That's because you're making it more human. It's a human.
That's right.
It's not, you know, us and them, and it should never be us and them. And until we drop the labels, we're going to continue to have an increase in stigma. And with the political system being the way that it is, let's take Jesse Mullet, who just got, you know, severely beaten from people that want to leave, you know, messages that basically say, we're targeting you. And so we have to make it safe for everyone. And we have to be able to talk and have sex education. We have to have the conversation of not just singling out a particular disease such as HIV or AIDS or syphilis or gonorrhea, but we have to talk about sex. We have to talk about it like Candy Barris talks about, you know, candy-coated
nights.
Candy-coated nights.
Just talk a little bit about the best way to talk about sexual health for women of all ages, but feel free to chime in for Black MSM too.
I think that we all can talk about this question because it impacts us all. And when we want to talk about sex, and this is coming from me, the Reverend, you have to be open and you have to be vulnerable and you have to understand that we're sexual beings. And so, therefore, if you're going to have sex or you want to have sex, or even if you want to make love, you have to be able to talk about what it is that you want. And how you want it, mm-hmm. and where you want it, and all those other things. But you can't be afraid to have the conversation, because the conversation is where sex starts taking place. It doesn't take place downstairs before upstairs. Upstairs happens first to get you in the mood, right? Mm-hmm. And so until we can actually begin to talk openly and honestly and not feel as though sex is something that should be shameful, that should be hidden. But we're sexual beings. And so why can't we... instead of talking about one specific strata and one specific gender or sexuality, why can't we talk about it all in the fishbowl?
That's one of the things that I'm really trying to get into in some of the work that I'm doing, really just unpacking the motivations and context of whatever's going on first. Like, what are the range of things that people are actually doing before we talk about, like, sex? Like, my question is, like, what is sex? Like, what are you doing? Like, how are we categorizing the range of behaviors to even be able to teach health, sexual health, mm-hmm. sexual behavior, sexual risk, whatever that is, or whatever. So I'm mostly interested in, you know, learning those best approaches to really inform you know, health messaging, not just for women, for men, for everybody, right? Mm-hmm. But before we can get there, we got to know what people are really doing to begin to even advocate for what that is.
So do we need to know what they're doing? Because I think we know what they're doing.
I think we don't.
You really think we don't?
I think
we should do some research together.
We are.
Okay.
But I think that, you know, I'm really interested in, like, you know, life course theoretical approaches and the whole thing about life course approaches, like, you know, unpacking generational differences in context and how people get to where they are. And so I think that I think there are generational differences. Well, we know there are generational differences in motivations for particular sexual relationships. Relationship dynamics are changing. What we're calling families are changing nowadays. Mm-hmm. You know, single parents are becoming that's a family. Same sex relationships are a family. So I think before we can really think about, you know, how do we really teach this stuff, it's changed. Like, what's going on right now, mm-hmm. to really in a systematic way. I mean, I think anecdotally, when you say we know, I think anecdotally we do, but in a systematic way, I don't think we have a good grasp on, like, the range of sexuality for women now, particularly nowadays, or gay men, particularly nowadays with the proliferation of same-sex marriage, same-sex relationships. We just don't. I don't think we have a good grasp on that. And then when we add the Black context on that, we definitely haven't gone there as a culture. So,
yeah. Because as a culture, we're just starting to open ourselves up to be public, to say the word sex in public, mm-hmm. to say it from the pulpit, mm-hmm. to, you know, talk about it in a, you know, in an office or in certain offices. You know, in the White House, it might not be being talked about. It's just being demonstrated. Mm-hmm. I'm sorry. But it's just one of those things that we really have to, you know, start freeing ourselves to have those conversations that impact our health. Mm. That impact the way in which we love each other and the way in which we come together. From a woman's perspective, I think it's really about finding the space where we feel as though we're empowered, that we have the power to speak to our partner, that we have the power to be able to say yes, to be able to say no, to be able to say, wait a minute, let's see, and I need to know. I need to know, because a lot of times I think we're operating from the space of I have these fairy tale dreams of, I want to be married, I want to be taken care of, or he has what I need, I'm going to be able to get what it is that I want. Those types of things are coming up for us, and we want what we want when we want it. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. But what we get is not what we really wanted mm-hmm. because we didn't take time to know.
And speaking on sex education from the kind of community level, grassroots, entrepreneur aspect, kind of seeking to disrupt the HIV preventionist treatment status quo, I think it's really important mm-hmm. to remember how we as educators walk into a space. For me, as I kind of merge my health and business mm-hmm. backgrounds, I think about kind of selling someone something and pitching something to someone. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So when I show up to this sex education space, am I pitching you a script that I've rehearsed over and over in my office, mm-hmm. or am I selling you on a healthy outcome based upon the information I know and listening to you kind of share what you want to learn from me? Right, I think when I show up in that space, I'm in that space willing to accommodate mm-hmm. the people who are listening. I'm not there to give them a message or mm-hmm. make sure they leave the room with something to do. I'm there to provide them with options. So until we kind of shift this power dynamic, if you will, where the provider walks into the space and they have all the power and privilege, I think we should give that power and privilege to the people who are receiving the sex education and let them kind of engage in conversations with you. Mm-hmm. Because if we're just going into rooms and checking off checklists that we showed you how to put on a condom, we told you what HIV stands for, we told you condoms work 99% of the time, but we aren't ever letting them kind of engage with the information and develop mm-hmm. their own relationship with that information. Mm-hmm. Because like you said, academically we are the experts, but they're also the experts as well too. So where does mm-hmm. that mm-hmm. power dynamic equalize? Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. And, I think. All right, so we're going into our last question. How can we change sex education to be more inclusive of LGBTQ communities?
I think that one of the great things.
No labels.
I think one of the great benefits that we have right now is the time and culture that we live in. There are Jhené Aiko saying, you know, eat the booty like groceries. There's RuPaul Drag Race on VH1. There are so many outlets that we have where we can culturally make this topic relevant to the people that we're having these conversations and building those relationships mm-hmm. with. But I think we do have that failure. It's like I said, when we walk into a room and straight men